Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Arsenal Özil, marca Mesut Özil. Lo da el Liniers, gol del Arsenal, remonta el Arsenal, Giroud, marcó Giroud.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunner Blog. James Fuff from Gunner Blog? James.
Yeah.
James. Fuff. I don't know where the extra fuff came from there. I apologise. But anyway, good morning to you.
Good morning. I mean, I think we're all feeling a bit fuff this morning, aren't we?
Fucking what is going on?
For fuck's
sake. Anyway, I think we better start this particular podcast with the big news, James. Mm. The big transfer news that is breaking as we speak. Oh, something that will get everybody very excited. Carl Jenkinson and Cohen Bramall are going to Birmingham City on loan.
Wow. Is that a done deal?
Well, it's a wheeler-dealer Harry Redknapp deal. That's what it is. It's on the verge of being completed, according to sources, reports. The Arsenal fullback duo are going to sign for Birmingham City on loan. Jenkinson in the final year of his contract, Cohen Bramall in the first year of his Arsenal career, and they're going to spend a formative developmental time at Birmingham City, after which Jenkinson, I assume, will leave, and I also assume that Cohen Bramall will leave. I'm not being hasty here, and of course I want to give the guy every chance, but if he ever plays more than 10 games for Arsenal, I'll be very surprised. But good luck to him out there. And it is, of course, exciting transfer news to get this podcast started.
Well, that's it. And I also just saw via Arsblog news that Chuba Akpom has been linked with a loan move to Celtic. So
it's all happening. It's one
in the eye for anyone who says this last week of the window won't be the most interesting, I think.
We're
all learning stuff this morning. I mean, wow, Carl Jenkins. That feels quite telling, doesn't it, that he might be going down to a Championship club rather than a Premier League club. I mean, probably not what he was hoping for, but there you go.
No, particularly when he had the chance to join Crystal Palace, didn't he, last January? And there were issues, I think, over his wages. Maybe there was more to it than that. I think there might have been a bit more to it than that. But, he could have been playing for Crystal Palace, and now he's going to be playing for Birmingham City. Maybe Birmingham have got a good chance of promotion. Maybe. I don't know. But it does feel a bit telling.
And obviously, a master tactician as well.
Well, of course, run around a bit. And that's what he's good at, in fairness, Carl. He's very good at running.
Yeah. I actually think Carl Jenkinson probably wouldn't be a bad wing back, you know, in the new Arsenal system, because it's mainly running, isn't it? Running and crossing. And if there's anything he can do, it's those.
That's it. The defending seems to be irrelevant at this point anyway by the state of this season. So,
delaying the inevitable?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Are we distracting ourselves from what we really have to talk about? Are we? I think we are.
I guess so. I watched the game in Scotland, and let me tell you, the Scottish weather did little to improve my mood throughout it.
Were you watching it outside?
Yeah.
I was sitting in the rain like, this is fucking even worse. How could you make a defeat to Stoke even worse? I've got to sit outside on a stoop on the step outside of a house or...
Yeah, no, watching in through someone else's window because they had BT Sport.
Turn it off!
Face pressed against the glass, soaked through. But, you know, it was quite a bleak evening, wasn't it, all in all?
It was. It was quite a bleak evening. Those 5:30 kickoffs, I don't like them on a Saturday evening. I just don't like them. There's something, I don't know, they're kind of like mushrooms to me.
Go on.
Right. I'm not a big fan of mushrooms.
I don't like mushrooms.
I've got this fundamental dislike of them, but every so often I can have some mushrooms and I think they're okay, maybe with a bit of breakfast or maybe with a steak, provided that they're cooked in the right way. I can deal with one or two mushrooms, but just at the very core of it, I have an aversion to mushrooms.
Is it the sliminess or...?
Yeah, kind of. It's a texture thing. And then I think there's just something primal, isn't there, that there's a suspicion of fungus. That you think, well, could this be the poison one? Could this be the poison mushroom? That, you know,
exactly.
Like in the fairy tales, you know, the guy, the prince ate the mushroom and then he died and Snow White came along and the seven dwarves, like, did things to him while he was asleep. So I'm suspicious of mushrooms in general, but I can't shake it. And I have this suspicion, this natural aversion to 5:30 kickoffs on a Saturday evening. I just can't explain it any better than that. And that's a really terrible explanation.
Yeah, well, it's fair enough. I mean, in theory, they're good things. You know, 5:30, you're into the evening, you know, have a couple of beers, watch the game. But I don't know. It never seems to pan out that way, especially for us and especially away from home.
Oh, right. Well, where do we start with this one? Do we start with...
team selection.
Yes, let's start with the team selection. What did you make of the decision not to start Per Mertesacker in a game that, to my mind, was absolutely perfect for him to start in?
Perfect, no pun intended.
Perfect.
I thought it was bizarre. And actually, it makes me think back to last week. I know that, you know, apparently he wasn't physically ready, but the player himself had felt he was against Leicester, wasn't involved, then he was ready this week, wasn't in the starting lineup. Mustafi was in there for holding. I could see some semblance of sense in that, but Kolasinac and Monreal staying in, I mean, I really was staggered to see that. I really, really thought that we might take that step of playing centre-backs at centre-back this time.
Crazy idea. But to me, it makes me think that Arsene Wenger no longer trusts Per Mertesacker as a player.
I think you're right.
If I could see the sense of last week where he's just had 4 days after having 12 stitches in his head, I can see that. But if he can't pick him for a game against Stoke, like, perfect game for him, because it's not like you're playing against speedy attackers who are going to run rings around him. Put him in there as the anchor man in a back three where you've got Mustafi on one side, you've got Monreal on the other side. You move... before we get on with this, I was going to say his name. I had another slew of emails from people telling me that we're pronouncing... The name of this guy wrong. So here is the man himself saying how to pronounce it. So hang on.
This is how you say my name. Sead Kolasinac.
Kolasinac. So we're going to just...
Kolasinac.
Kolasinac.
Kolasinac. Kolasinac. The emphasis on the C.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. But anyway, so then you have Kolasinac on the left-hand side, and you've got one of Bellerin and Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right-hand side, and to me then that makes a very well-balanced back three and back five. So if he's not picking him for this game, it suggests that he has real doubts about using him.
I agree. And I think those doubts, you know, were there when Per came back from injury last season. It wasn't like Arsene hurried him into the first team squad. In fact, he barely gave him a minute until he was absolutely forced to in the cup final.
Yeah. Did you read the interview with him in the Guardian? There was a great interview with him
in the
Guardian.
Really
like, fantastic. Look it up. I think it's by Stuart James who did the interview. It was in the Guardian last week. And Mertesacker's talking about, look, I'm training every day. I'm training and training. I'm not being given a chance. I'm not being included in the squad. And, you know, that included some cup games. It included some games where you feel like, or you felt like he could certainly make a contribution, particularly when we went to three at the back last season and when things were wrong. So it says to me that Arsene Wenger no longer trusts Per Mertesacker as a player, and I think that's a shame, and I think the cup final appearance makes that even more hard to understand, because he was absolutely brilliant, and I know that he's in the last year of his playing career, I know that he's getting on a bit, but it showed that for certain games, Mertesacker is a great option, as the anchor man in a back three. And I think the Stoke game was certainly one of those games. As it was, then we have Monreal doing a job that he's not capable of doing. I don't think he is. I like Monreal. We both like Monreal as a player. And in a back three, I think he's excellent as one of the men either side. Well, obviously to the left-hand side of the not the sweeper, but that middle center half. He's really, really good there, but he's not really, really good as that middle center half.
Yeah, I mean, I thought what was crazy was that against Leicester, what we really lacked was seniority, experience, familiarity with that central defensive area. And we had a chance to put that back in, and we didn't. I mean, on the Mertesacker thing, I think he was absolutely brilliant in the FA Cup final, and there won't be a single Arsenal fan who'll deny that. You have to wonder if Arsene Wenger is seeing something else on the training ground that's making him a little bit reluctant to put him back into the side. But if that is the case, then why is he part of the squad? Do you know what I mean? Why have we not replaced him? If Arsene Wenger doesn't think he's good enough to play, then why, you know, it's an odd situation. It's a very odd situation.
Well, we're in an odd situation with our central defenders anyway, aren't we? Because he's left Rob Holding out now after one bad game, which you wonder, I mean, I've got visions of Callum Chambers going on there. Even though Arsene Wenger spoke about it at that Football Writers event, he said, you know, young centre-halves, I know they're going to cost me points at some point. But, you know, Holding didn't cost us points. To have left him out of the squad altogether, I have to question whether that's the right move for the lad's confidence. He doesn't seem to rate Callum Chambers, who hasn't even been in the squad. He sold Gabriel, and I think we're in a position, if he doesn't trust Mertesacker, or if he doesn't want to play Mertesacker, then we're really, really light on central defenders.
Do you think he really likes Kolasinac as a centre-half?
I hope not. I like him as a player, and I think he's... I would assume that he was bought for the left-hand side. You know, that was my thinking. He was bought to be the left-sided wingback. That's what Arsene Wenger talked about him. He said, we watched him. He's very good in the final third. He provides assists. If that's what you want, if that's why you bought the player, goddamn fucking play him there. Don't play Hector Bellerin there where he is restricted because he's a right-footed player playing on the left-hand side. I mean, why are you playing Bellerin there? To play Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right-hand side? You know, it was bad. I think the team selection was bad at the back, even if the issues I think we had in the game, the bigger issues we had were further forward, where we just couldn't take our chances. But I just couldn't get my head around that team selection. What did you make of the substitutions as well?
Substitutions were odd, weren't they? I forget precisely who came on for who now.
Okay, Giroud came on for Kolasinac.
Yeah. That was strange because that kept Bellerin as a left-back effectively, didn't it? You could have... You had two left-backs available to play in that position and that you kept Bellerin out there. Mm. So that was a really odd one.
Mm. And then I thought, you know, I understand the need to bring Giroud on because he's a guy who can get you a goal, as he showed against Leicester and numerous times last season coming off the bench. He was a guy who could get you a goal. But I thought taking Kolasinac off was the wrong move there. He should have taken either Bellerin or Oxlade-Chamberlain off and left Kolasinac on the left-hand side, where that's his natural position. It gives you some natural width, the ability to cross the ball from the left-hand side, get to the byline, you know, stick it in the box for Giroud if that's the way you're going to play. I thought that was a very strange one. Then we have, he takes Lacazette off for Walcott or Iwobi, however you want to view those two substitutions. He takes Xhaka off as well at the same time. I thought that change, those two changes pretty much stopped what little momentum I thought we had some momentum in the last few minutes. But I thought, you know, when you're playing in a way that you're looking for crosses into Giroud or good balls into the box or good balls over the top to try and find a little bit of space, taking Xhaka off was a really odd one. And Walcott, he said, I wanted to put Walcott on to make crosses for Giroud. What the fuck? Where does it... I just... He had a bad day at the office, Arsene Wenger, I think.
Yeah, and we ended up going back to a back four. I mean, the thing is, it wasn't that dissimilar from the way things went against Leicester when, you know, we ended up with six players out of position. It was a complete chaos, but we managed to somehow get the goals. But there wasn't any coherent strategy to that. And I think in some respects, we got a little bit lucky. And I think what happened at Stoke was a similarly kind of wild tactical plan, and it didn't work at all. I mean, at the end, we had a central midfield of Iwobi and Ramsey, and there's just not enough structure to that, is there, to try and control the game or build any kind of momentum. And they're fundamentally two attacking players, really.
Yeah, and you know, you're right that it was similar to the Leicester game. Throw people on and let's try and get some goals. But what he did was he took off the man who got the two assists for the two goals that won us the game against Leicester. That was Xhaka. Now, I know he didn't have a great game and he was careless in midfield leading up to the goal. He gave the ball away far too cheaply. I think there was a lot we could have done to prevent that goal. We could have defended it better, but it stemmed from that piece of play. And I think his passing, you know, the long passing that he's so good at, switching the play, his radar was off there. I think he ended up with 85% passing completion. So it wasn't like ridiculous. But when you're misplacing those passes, those long passes, it looks a bit more... what's the word, wasteful than it actually is, because it's, you know, you're playing these passes, it looks more obvious or whatever. But I just thought that was a bad move, taking off Xhaka. It felt to me more like he wanted to take off Xhaka than he wanted to put somebody else on, because he right. does have that ability to open up defences.
Yeah, I mean, I almost think, you know, at that stage of the game, you might as well drop Xhaka in as a centre-half, because it was us having the ball 100% of the time. You know, you want to keep him on the field because you need someone who can pick those passes from deep. Mm. And I also think the taking Lacazette off, I mean, he lashed in that shot, didn't he?
Yeah.
Left foot into the top corner. A brilliant, brilliant strike. If I was a Stoke defender and saw him coming off a couple of minutes after that, I think I probably would have felt pretty relieved.
Yeah.
I mean, God knows Danny Welbeck's not going to do that.
Well, that's exactly it, isn't it? I cannot understand. Like, if you've got to throw Walcott on, okay, throw him on. If that's your plan, you know, to put crosses in for Giroud, which he didn't do and made no crosses. But take Welbeck off. Mm. Great athlete. Physically really powerful. I love that moment where he knocked that guy over on the touchline. That was great. But, you know, in front of goal, fucking hell, he had a bad day. And he, you know, he's got all the attributes, but just the finishing is so off. And when you see Lacazette, the movement, he stayed onside. I absolutely believe that goal was onside. Great flick from Giroud. He read the flick from Giroud so well. On the turn, on the shoulder of the defender, he lashed the ball into the top corner. Like, I mean, that was probably our best effort on goal. It was wrongly disallowed for offside. And then you take the guy off. What, like, why? I mean, maybe there was an injury. Maybe he's suffering a bit from something. I don't know. That could be the thing, and they keep that sort of information. But gee, it doesn't make any sense on the face of it, does it?
No, I mean, Arsene Wenger does have a habit of kind of doing this with new signings sometimes. He brings them off, doesn't let them complete the 90 minutes because he's bedding them in. But when you really need a goal, taking off the guy who bought specifically to be the finisher, to be the cutting edge and be the difference, it certainly raised a few eyebrows. And in a match like that, where Stoke are so deep, so entrenched, I just feel like Walcott is a waste of a sub. I really do. Like, it's just not his game, is it, to try and, you know, play a quick 1-2 and break through those tight lines. So, yeah, I thought the manager's decisions on the day were odd. And I think that it's almost remarkable how he's managed to take a system that we introduced for its added defensive security and includes a third centre-back and make it kind of a bit shapeless and a bit porous very quickly.
Well, you know, we discussed it on the Arsecast on Friday with Philippe that we concede more goals. Or not that we concede more goals, but certainly the expected goals conceded is greater than it is when we play with a back four. So, you know, I have a feeling, and I don't know if you share this belief or not, but I think sooner rather than later we're going to see this team revert to a back four.
Do you really think that?
Yeah.
I think that would be a big surprise, only because he just didn't really do it in pre-season. But I guess he's reasoning that it's not a difficult switch to make because they've all played it so much in the past.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm not sure he's convinced by the back three. And I think he stuck with it while we were winning. But I think if we have a couple of games where we don't lose, I think he's going to revert to what he feels more comfortable with, and that is a back four. How that then impacts our midfield remains to be seen. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we went back to a back four in, you know, not long into this season.
So you said that you thought that our problems going forward were almost bigger than our ones at the back. Yeah. Do you just mean in terms of not being able to make the most of the possession that we had? Because we had the ball a lot in this game.
Yeah, we had, what, 78% possession, something like that? Yeah. I think it's the lowest total any team has ever had in one a game, Stoke, for years and years, or since time began, something like that, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think... you know, the defending wasn't great for the goal. It was a stupid goal to give away. But Stoke were basically shite. They were, you know, this is not the Stoke team that's terrorized us in the past. It's not like Stoke were always chock full of great players. You know, they've got some good players in their team, but they're not very good. They're really not very good. And to have that much possession and to not do enough with it, I think, was our problem. You know, we didn't create very much for Lacazette. We didn't make the most of the opportunities that we did have. We didn't get a penalty either. I think that was definitely a penalty on Hector Bellerin in the first half after about 20 minutes. And that would certainly 100%. Have changed the trajectory of the game, the disallowed goal, you know, so we can feel a little bit aggrieved on the day. But, you know, there were too many familiar issues, I think, is the problem. If you look at the game in isolation, you can feel somewhat aggrieved. And perhaps chalk it down to one of those days. But it's not in isolation. You know, when you've got a manager who's been there for 20-odd years, you can't look at games in isolation. Or, you know, it is only the second game of the season. Of course, we shouldn't lose our shit. But when you see that kind of performance, that kind of ineffectiveness going forward, you know, you look at our squad and you think, if we're going to make up for deficiencies defensively, it is going to be in the forward positions because we've got so many players. Mm. But how many of those players... in reality, should we be banking on? When you look at the system, you know, Danny Welbeck, a great guy, very popular, but is he going to get you that many goals? Where the fuck does Theo Walcott fit into this system? Where does he fit? I don't know. How is he going to score you goals if we're not going to play with a right winger or if we're not going to play him up front as a striker? I mean, could, you know, these are issues that we have in the attacking sense. Perhaps we really ought to be looking at a couple of those players and thinking, okay, well, it's time to move you on and look at a different option.
I think that's probably right. And I think, I mean, you know, how many times last season, let's not forget, were we bailed out by Alexis Sanchez and we didn't have him at our disposal this weekend? And I think you saw how much we miss him when he's not there. And I guess Arsene's decision on Alexis has been vindicated to an extent because we are just not nearly the same force. We're not nearly as clinical without him in there. And I mean, he'll be back next week, which is some comfort. It is a frustrating one because I actually thought... I didn't think that this was the worst Arsenal performance I've seen in a long time. You know, I didn't think it was quite as bad as it's been... at other stages last season, for example. We created some chances. You know, we didn't give away loads of opportunities. They just happened to take the one very good one they were presented with. It was quite a narrow margin of defeat, not just in terms of the scoreline, but in terms of what actually happened on the pitch. The problem is that we're all so exhausted of it, right? We're all so bored of it that when it happens again, inevitably all the same gripes come to the surface.
Yeah. And the I suppose the other thing is that it was avoidable. That, again, it's not as if we were taken apart by a great team, some beautiful flowing football. It was avoidable, I think, the defeat, the goal was just so careless. You know, it came from an individual mistake. But I'm not sure we worked hard enough to make up for that mistake at the time. But yeah, you're right. It is. And it's Stoke again. It's Stoke away. You know, we went there at the end of last season and spanked them 4-1. And you're thinking, okay, well, that's that hoodoo done and dusted. You know, every time we've played Stoke at the Emirates, we've beaten them. Like, they've never won a game at the Emirates. I don't think they've even, drawn a game. But every time we go there, you know, there's an issue. Something happens to us as a collective. And you thought, okay, well, at least we've got our, you know, we've got over that. We can put it behind us. And it felt a bit like that, like the old days, like we were just repeating the cycle, you know?
Yeah. And I must say, I know we've spoken about the attack, we've spoken about the central defence. I think there were definitely causes for concern in the central midfield too. I know it's an area people have talked about all summer long, really, and This is the first time this season that Ramsey and Xhaka have started together, but definitely the balance of that midfield partnership didn't look quite right. I felt like Ramsey, you know, he almost operates in a free role at times from central midfield. You know, there were periods where he was well beyond the striker, and that is the positive aspect of his game, but it can leave Xhaka isolated. And on their goal, you know, Xhaka conceded possession, he chased after it, and suddenly we just didn't have a midfield. You know, Ramsey was caught up the field too, and you know, that part of the pitch is an area where I think we don't look as secure as you would hope.
Sure. No, I mean, I think we need a signing. I mean, the thing about Ramsey is I assume that he is playing to instruction, not just going out there and doing whatever the hell he wants. I assume that he is being told to get forward when we have possession, when we're coming out of defense with possession. It's got to be part of the tactics, I guess, that Arsene Wenger is deploying to have Ramsey as far forward as that, rather than him just wandering around. It's, I guess, in a way, the way people got a bit cheesed off with Coquelin. Remember last season when he was the furthest midfielder forward and people were going, well, what's he doing? But again, you've got to assume that that's what he's been instructed to do. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. Midfield was not right. Midfield hasn't been right for some time. There is the need for a signing in there. There's a need for a more, let's say, if you could cross Elneny's tidiness on the ball with somebody who could win the ball really well with some tackling, a bit more of a physical player in there, I think we need that kind of a player to stitch everything together as it stands. Again, that depends on the system, but of course, you know, it's hard to look at this team and find the balance when you're playing a completely imbalanced back three or back five as well. What did you make of Mesut Ozil's performance? Because I've seen a lot of criticism of him. I believe that he was torn to shreds on TV after the game by Steven Gerrard and Martin Keown. I didn't look at Match of the Day because Match of the Day is... I don't look at Match of the Day when we lose. And I saw a lot of criticism of Ozil, but you know, I didn't think he was in any way one of the problems that we had on Saturday against Stoke. He passed the ball very well. He made some chances. He had a couple of efforts on goal, one of which went just wide. I didn't think he was the problem.
I thought he was all right on the ball, but I must say there was a moment in the first half where I noticed a couple of challenges back-to-back where they were almost 60-40 in his favour and he didn't go in for them. And that's not new. That's not because his contract's running out. That's not because he wasn't up for it. That is the way he plays. But I must say at that point in the game, that definitely did get my goat. But I don't think he was... It would be wrong to say that he was worse than anybody else. Perhaps even in that regard. I mean, you know, Stoke aren't even the physical force that they once were. But you know, maybe, nor are we. So it's kind of it kind of levels out, I guess. Yeah. But no, I didn't think he was particularly bad on the ball. I did find some of his unwillingness to compete a bit frustrating at times, in one-to-one duels. But again, if you don't like that about Ozil, you're never going to like that about Ozil, right?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe it's because people want him to step up in a game like this. Where
I guess so, especially when Alexis isn't around.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But, you know, I didn't think he shirked his responsibility on the ball. I thought he made a couple of good chances. One for Bellerin, which Bellerin spooned over the bar from the edge of the box. And there was a great cross for Danny Welbeck, who shouldered the ball over the bar, didn't even make contact with the header. You know, so those are the moments where Ozil can make a difference, but the issue is those chances are not being finished.
Yeah, that's it. And ultimately, if Danny Welbeck does put that header in the net, if Hector Bellerin does side foot that home, we're talking about performance with two assists, and we're all praising, you know, his genius and his
exactly.
Vision.
So I mean, in some ways, he is a slave to what's ahead of him or the players that he's creating those chances for. You know, a difficult day.
And then I suppose the one thing we haven't really touched on, maybe we'll get onto it, is why Hector Bellerin's playing out on the left flank. I mean, I'm absolutely flabbergasted at that. And it feels like now, it does feel like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's kind of being included almost to make a point, almost as if it's part of the contract negotiations. It feels absurd that we're finding a way to shoehorn both him and Bellerin into the same team.
Yeah, look, Bellerin is not a left wing back. He can do a job there, but the reason he's being asked to do the job there is because Arsene Wenger thinks that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is worse in that position, right? And then when everyone's fit, Bellerin is the first choice right wing back. So he thinks Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is worse in that position than Bellerin. You know, I like a lot of what Oxlade-Chamberlain does. I really do. And I thought he had some really good moments, good dribbling. But I just don't quite understand what's happening with this team and why we're using him there. The Bellerin-Oxlade-Chamberlain thing really divides opinion at the moment. I know there's a lot of people who would prefer Oxlade-Chamberlain there. Me, I just prefer Hector Bellerin there. I think he is the future. Obviously, he signed a six-year contract with the club. It goes back to this imbalance in the back five again. I can't figure out what the thinking was there. And I thought Arsene Wenger, after the game, when he was talking about it, I thought it was a bit strange the way he was talking about it. What did he say? On Bellerin, he can play there. I play him or Chamberlain there. And Chamberlain on the right looks good as well. Both of them are more right-sided players, I agree. And depending on the game, I sometimes choose right and sometimes left. What?
The terrifying thing about that is it sounds like a more than just a short-term fix, doesn't it? It sounds like something he's planning on doing beyond this point, which I have no time for, really.
Yeah, I think it's absurd to have bought one of the best left wing-backs from the Bundesliga who made a significant attacking contribution to Schalke last season, was in the Bundesliga Team of the Year, and not play him in his best position, or certainly not play him where we've obviously earmarked him from the start. That's why we bought him to play there. The first game of the season, I understand we had defensive issues, but if we continue to not play him there or shoehorn him into the back three, I just find it very hard, because normally when Arsene Wenger picks his team, you can see the logic to it. You know, even if you disagree with the team selection, you can usually find a way to understand why it is he's chosen the team that he has. And I was unable to do that with the team that he picked for Stoke and with the substitutions that he made.
I agree. Oh, God. It's good to have football back, isn't it?
Marvellous. Marvellous. Is there anything else on the game that we should discuss? Or I presume other things will come up in the questions, but...
I'm just trying to think. I mean, I've blacked a lot of it out, trying desperately to move on. I can confirm, by the way, that Cohen Bramall and Carl Jenkinson have officially signed for Birmingham City while we've been on air. So there you go. Some good news, I guess.
I'm sorry, I was just looking for my fanfare sound effect there.
No, I don't. I mean, what about the whole, the officials element of it? I mean, we were unfortunate in some respects, weren't we, with the decisions definitely on the day. That has to be factored into proceedings.
Yes, it does. One of the most shocking things that I discovered last week is that Andre Mariner actually is called Andrew Mariner and changed his name to Andre.
Oh, my word. Seriously. Betrayed Andrews everywhere.
Yeah, well, look, I'm glad to have him in a different club, to be honest. I don't want to be one of them. But no, it's terrible. the Bellerin penalty, clearly a penalty. I thought the others, the handballs, were accidental, so I wouldn't be on that. But the offside was a terrible, terrible decision. The only thing I can think of is that the linesman maybe thought that it hit Ramsey or that Ramsey played it to him. I could see some people mention that. But for me, he was absolutely onside, a great finish. Look, sometimes you get the decision, sometimes you don't, right? Last week, we were talking about a piece of sublime control from Mesut Ozil, which was a clear handball, which led to, was it the Ramsey goal?
Yes, it was.
So I don't know that we can be... we can't complain too much, can we, if we weren't complaining last week?
No, we can't be too sour. Yeah. I must say, I was watching on BT Sport, I think it was, and Steve McManaman was commentating. And I did find it bizarre. He kept saying what a brilliant decision it was from the linesman. I just found that maddening. I was like, on what grounds is that a brilliant... I mean, it was like, it was so marginal that I don't think it can have been a brilliant decision. It was just a guess, wasn't it?
It was. It was a bad decision. And obviously a very costly one for us. But, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of blaming officials, because as we saw last week against Leicester, sometimes you get the decisions in your favour and sometimes, like against Stoke, you don't. And they were bad decisions. I'm not saying they weren't bad decisions, but like, it's not as if we didn't have chances. It's not as if we didn't dominate the game. It's not as if we didn't have more possession, more of the ball, more of the territory that we ultimately didn't do enough with. And I think that's where the focus should be. You know, it's annoying when decisions don't go your way. I get it. And I was really cheesed off about the goal and really cheesed off about the penalty. But it swings and roundabouts in a way. So, yeah, I don't think we can shit refereeing, but I don't think we can really hold that up as the key reason. But, you know, in a tight game, of course, if you get the decision your way, it makes a big difference. And even if we draw in that game 1-1, I don't think there'd be the same outpouring of anger and ire. Of course, there wouldn't. So, I don't know. What can you do? Those decisions are out of your control. So what you can control is your own performance and what you do with the football. And what we did wasn't good enough to get any points on the day.
No. I mean, I'll be honest. I wasn't imagining that this Arsenal season would be another Invincibles campaign. I wasn't thinking that. I wasn't envisaging, you know, a long unbeaten spell. I think we will lose games across the course of the season. But this was a frustrating one to lose because of who the opponents are, because of the nature in which it happened. Thank God we got that winner against Leicester on the opening day. Yeah. Let's just say that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, before we go into part two, I suppose we should say that it was quite amusing to see Tottenham lose. That did brighten up my weekend very slightly, even if it means that Chelsea won. It was still worth it to see Tottenham lose very late on.
Yeah, that was absolutely lovely. I really enjoyed that. I mean, you know, I was immediately felt a little bit sick at celebrating a Chelsea goal, but it was nice to see, and good for them to sort of christen Wembley, you know, start as they mean to go on.
Yeah, absolutely. I should just point out that I did not celebrate a Chelsea goal. I laughed. I laughed at Tottenham. I didn't celebrate the Chelsea goal. So you have got some...
I've got some penance to do there.
Absolutely. You need to scrub yourself off. You're unclean. Unclean. All right. We are going to take a break. Unless there's anything else from the weekend's Premier League you want to touch on?
Not particularly, no. I mean, literally just laughing at Spurs was the only kind of real positive. Manchester United are worrying me at the moment. So, yeah, let's probably not talk about that.
Yeah. You could point out that they played two crap teams, but then, you know, so did we, basically.
And, so did we. That's the thing.
So let's not go down that road. Okay, right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arseblog. Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at Arseblog, and also on the Arseblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheArseblog. Just want to announce that Carl Jenkinson, before he left, has signed a new 7-year contract with the club, just so we can get some transfer value for him as and when he has a cracking season for Birmingham. So there you go.
That's good news. Hopefully we can secure a new long-term deal for Joel Campbell as well. That will really tie off the transfer window nicely.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But we've got to get that Matthew Debussy contract sorted out before we go anywhere near Joel Campbell.
I just have noticed, by the way, that Joel Campbell's been been given a new squad number. He's been given the number 27, following in the footsteps of the likes of Emmanuel Eboué.
Right, because he was 28.
Lucas Perez, of course, has taken his 28, yeah.
But Lucas Perez more than likely is going to leave the club on loan. That was a really weird kind of thing, wasn't it? I understand giving Lacazette number 9, but then why give Perez a number of Joel Campbell? Why didn't they just give Perez a number that was unused rather than Joel Campbell's number, then have to reassign Joel Campbell a number that he's probably not ever going to use again either? It's a terrible, wasteful way of dealing with numbers. Numbers are important. They have feelings too, you know.
Maybe Joel Campbell had specifically asked to move to 27 because he is such a disciple of Eboué. He felt that, you know, it was his destiny to be number 27.
Right.
And they knew this before.
More transfer news coming in. We were linked with a Nice midfielder, Jean-Michel Seri. Anyway, he's joined Barcelona on a 4-year deal. So there you go. We won't be signing that guy.
There you go. I actually think he would have been really good, but there you go.
What can you do indeed other than not do any transfers? I think that's what we're going to do. Okay, I'm going to start the questions. This one comes from Nico, who's at Ill Disposed on Twitter, I think that's what it is, and he says, one rational reason to kick the ball out when a Stoke player is down, just one. I think he means give him one. So you can give him one, James.
One rational reason to kick the ball out when a Stoke player is down. Who was it who did it in the end? Was it Nacho Monreal?
Yeah.
I forget now.
Yeah. And I could see it happening. I could see it going through his head for about 5 or 10 seconds before he did it. And I was going, just don't do it. Whatever you do, Nacho, don't fucking do it. Don't do it. Please don't. Just don't do it. I can see you thinking about it. Don't do it, Nacho. Don't do it. Don't do it. The guy's not injured. He's just knackered. He was a big lumbering fucker who ran up the field and got tackled, and he's just exhausted. He's not injured. Don't do it, Nacho. Don't. Oh, for fuck's sake! That's the way it went. Yeah. And I actually shouted that out loud, and I think the dog left the room.
Arsenal fans everywhere, I think, were mirroring that exact behaviour. Why do it? I don't know. To be the bigger man, I guess, but...
Don't be the bigger man, just be a cunt. We need to be a bit more cunty. And it's not even that cunty, it's just the fucking rules. Like, if the guy's actually injured...
The referee can stop it, of course,
Of course. If the guy's lying there and his fucking leg is hanging off because he's had a dreadful tackle and you play on... There's a line probably that you shouldn't cross. But if a guy's just lying down because he's fucking tired, a professional athlete is tired because he's run 60 yards upfield, fuck that guy. Leave him on the ground. Stop listening to the fucking Stoke fans and just play on. Just fucking play on. It drove me mad. It really did.
It was Diouf, wasn't it? He had basically just exhausted himself, I think, on a lumber upfield. And then
lay down.
It's this horrible thing where you can sort of see the players passively passing it around. No one wants to be the guy to actually put it out. They're not really clear on what they should do. And in the end, Monreal kind of, you know, assumed responsibility and did it. But, yeah, there was no need. There was no need. One good reason. I'm not sure we can come up with a good reason.
There is no good reason. The only reason to do it is if the guy is genuinely injured and in real need of treatment. And I don't mean if he's like pulled his hamstring or if he's got a bit of a sore. You know, if he's really, really in need of immediate treatment, like a head injury, that's when the referee can stop the game. But like, this is really fucking simple to sort out. Really simple. It takes, what, 10 seconds on the training ground to say, next time that happens, do not put the ball out of play. Keep playing. Just keep playing. If the referee wants to stop the game, there's nothing you can do about that, but play to the fucking whistle. And next time that happens and one of our players decides to be too nice and puts the ball out, give him a wedgie. Like, from the strongest member of the squad, you're going to get a wedgie. Like, just don't fucking do it.
In seriousness, do you think that a pro player, can tell if a guy who's gone down is injured or not?
Yeah, because they've all been injured, and they've all pretended to be injured, and they've all done that thing where they've run too far and they might not have the guts to get back. Well, I mean, actually, I don't know why Juve was, apart from just basic lack of fitness, why he was so exhausted by what he did. I know he's not normally the rampaging fullback kind of a guy, but Jesus Christ. I think the players know. Of course the players know when a guy's really injured. And he wasn't really injured. He was just tired. And we put the ball out because the guy was feeling a bit tired. Maybe we should have brought him on a nice cup of cocoa as well, fetched his slippers for him, sat him down by the fire, read him a fucking bedtime story while we were at it. Fuck that. Seriously.
Yeah. Well, look, hopefully we've learned from it. But we don't really learn from lessons, do we? So I wouldn't bet on it.
It's true. We don't learn from lessons, even when we talk about learning our lessons.
Well, that's the clearest indication that we aren't going to learn from them. If we talk about it, we're definitely not going to do it.
Okay, go on. Your turn.
This is, speaking of learning lessons, this question is on Facebook from Matthew Plevy, and he says, blogs, which I assume he means he's abbreviating AskBlogger there, isn't he, to you. He says, why do you think Wenger drops a youngster from the squad altogether after the first bad game they play? Like dropping Holding for Stoke after he's been excellent in most games he's played. It seems like it does more harm than good, brackets, Chambers. He speaks so much about giving young players a chance, but it seems like one strike and they're out.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see what happens with Holding now, because I think I can sort of understand wanting to take him out of the firing line a bit if he's had a game in which his confidence has been a little bit shaken, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Holding, as a young central defender, he needs a player like Mertesacker or Koscielny alongside him, because when you're a young central defender, if you've got the experienced guy there talking to you through the game, it makes such a difference. It helps you learn. I think he wouldn't necessarily have had that with Monreal, who's maybe not as good a communicator, and Mustafi, I think, has got his own issues as a central defender. So we'll have to see what happens here with Holding. But if he's leaves him out of the squad for a couple of weeks and doesn't give him a game, you have to wonder whether or not that is going to damage his confidence. That maybe the best thing for him would have been to start against Stoke and get a good performance under his belt. He played well there last season. If you remember, he clattered into Arnautovic, and that was one of the fun moments towards the end of last season. Yeah, look, he talked about it. As I said, he talked about it, that he knows young central defenders are going to cost you points, but you've got to play them. You've got to have faith in their talent. You know, he says, I've got to play you. You know, I know you're going to cost me points, but your talent is such that I'm going to play you. And then he does exactly the opposite when it comes to Holding this time around. So, yeah, that was a difficult one for me to understand. I think he should have been on the bench rather than being left out of the squad altogether. So,
and what do you make of Callum Chambers? I mean, not even on the bench for the first two games. Is that an indication that it's done for him at Arsenal? I mean, Ashish Shetty on Twitter says, if Callum Chambers is not going to play in games when Koscielny and Mertesacker aren't playing, isn't it better to sell him then?
Exactly. And we have another question here on defence as well from Anish Chandoke, I think it is. And he says, if every other defender is not in plans and Koscielny's unfit, Mustafi reckless, why aren't we in the market for a central defender? And he says, Gabriel and Chambers are not in Arsene Wenger's plans. Holding also left out, and Mertesacker didn't get the game, meaning he's not in his plans. All of a sudden, you know, you go from what looked like a fairly strong central defensive lineup, right? You had at the start of the season before it began, on paper, you've got Koscielny, you've got Mustafi, you've got Holding, you've got Mertesacker, you've got Monreal who can play there, you've got Chambers, you've got Gabriel, you've got Kolasinac who can play there. I feel like I'm missing somebody out, but Mertesacker, who I may have mentioned, I can't remember, but it looked like you've got all these great options and great combinations to make back threes out of, and now, two games into the season, we've got more questions and answers when it comes to our central defenders and how highly the manager rates some of those players. It's hard to understand.
Yeah, and I think, you know, last season with our midfield, there was this big issue of, well, who is first choice? You know, what is the best combination? And actually, I think this season that's almost flipped to be the question about central defence. You know, we know if he's fit, Lauren Koscielny is going to be in there.
Yeah.
But I think it's genuinely difficult to predict which other two players are in Arsene Wenger's first choice back three at the moment. I mean, that's partly because they haven't all been available, but it is difficult to say. I mean, it feels like Mustafi is someone he'll want to bed in and he'll want to be part of that because, you know, he spent so much money on him for the first instance. Mm. But I mean, Eric Conan on Twitter, at the Eric Conan says, is it time we admitted Mustafi is not the centre-back we need? Too impulsive and never looks composed. Should we take Inter's money and bid for Van Dijk?
Well, no, I don't think we can at this moment in time, because if you sell Mustafi, then you've got what? You're missing one of the defenders that Arsene Wenger seems at least to have some faith in. And I think he deserves at least a second season, to be honest. You know, he's still quite young in the life of a centre-half. He's 24 or 25, maybe, just gone that way. You know, if you were replete with options and Inter Milan came in with a load of money, then maybe you'd think about it. But as it stands, absolutely not. And I think Inter's offer was a loan anyway, wasn't it? It wasn't a bid for Mustafi. They were looking to take him on loan. So absolutely not. You can't get rid of him that quickly. But I agree he's got some issues with his game. Like, there was one moment really early in the game where Stoke were coming forward. He went sliding in right on the edge of the box. It could have been inside the box. I'll have to look at it again. But he's off his feet. He's sliding in. And he does that too often.
Yeah.
And I think that's a part of his game that he really needs to be coached on. You know, when to go in like that, when to slide in. You've got to stay on your feet, particularly around the box. It's just absurd. That was a really, really costly, or could have been a really costly tackle, you know, because the guy jumped over him. If the guy had left his legs in, you know, that could have been a penalty really early in the game. So,
Of course.
I don't know. But no, you can't. I mean, should we be in the market for a centre half? It feels like we should be, because the manager looks to be unconvinced by so many of the players that he has at his disposal. And he's let one of them go anyway, in Gabriel, who's gone to Valencia. So, yeah.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it almost feels like that's why we went to three in the first place, because it, you know, two kind of wasn't enough. Didn't really satisfy us, and he couldn't really find a combination that, apart from Koscielny and Mertesacker, which served him well for a couple of years, he couldn't really find a combination that worked. So, yeah, big questions to be answered there. Big questions to be answered.
Well, Koscielny and Mertesacker as a pairing were really good because of the qualities that they have. You know, the two central defenders, you know, their varying qualities really complemented each other, but we don't seem to have that in the squad at this moment in time. Koscielny and Mustafi feels to me like Koscielny and Vermaelen, two players who are too similar, who want to defend high up the pitch, you know? So it's about finding somebody who can replace Mertesacker in a way. You know, somebody who's got that bit more composure, somebody who reads the game better, that more physical presence, you know, somebody who can intercept and play the ball out from deep. You know, I think Mertesacker, obviously in the twilight of his career, but a much underrated player, I think, by many Arsenal fans. And, you know, if we're going to go out and we're going to buy a central defender, we need maybe to look at somebody, you know, in that mold. But who that is, whether it's Van Dijk, I don't know. But.
Well, I mean, he's at the other extreme of his career, but Rob Holding does have a lot of those natural attributes.
That's true. You know? That's true. So put your faith in Holding. If he's the guy for the future, then, you know, let's do it. Why not?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm inclined to agree. I think, you know, he has that composure. He has the height. He has the physique. So he's quicker than Per as well. So, I really hope this doesn't damage him too much being taken out of the team for this game. I mean, if you look at the two matches we've lost since we switched to a back three, it's Spurs away and it's Stoke away, and they're both the games in which Holding didn't start.
Mm. Yeah, read into that what you will. Okay, here's a question from Brad Dennett, who's at Brad_Dennett on Twitter. And he says, as we've only bought one player, Kolasinac being free, has Arsene Wenger been frugal? £50 million for a striker proving not very much in this market.
Yeah, I was interested. I don't know if you saw, by the way, I've just realised that I might be about to sneeze. So I'm just warning you. I've got that feeling. It's been tingling for about a minute.
Just look out the window. Look out the window. You can look up towards. Yeah, look towards the sun, the sunlight.
What, and that makes it go away?
No, it makes you sneeze.
I can't see the sun. It's obscured by trees, but the feeling's gone away, so I'm happy either way.
All right. Okay.
Anyway, I was intrigued by those quotes from Arsene Wenger, who was speaking about his summer transfer activity, and he said, the advantage of signing a player for free is that it effectively allows you to divide your other transfer deal by two. Did you see this?
Yeah.
So he was like, rather than £50 million for one player, it's like you've paid £25 million for each. And I can imagine him sort of making that justification for himself. You know, I always was quite impressed that he went and spent £50 million on Lacazette. But then when you think in his head, he's like, well, actually it's £25 million because I've got Kolasinac for free. Mm. Suddenly that made more sense of it. Has he been frugal? I mean, that's not a lot of money for a club of our size to spend in any given transfer window at the moment.
No, it's not. It's not. Especially this particular transfer market. I think some of last season is, maybe last summer is impacting on what we're spending this summer. You know, when you buy Xhaka, what did we spend? About £90 million last summer. But we have, I guess, brought in, when you look at it now, oh God, we'll have to do the, how much have we spent? Anyone out there who can remember where we talked about how much we'd spend net and all that?
I know I'm way off. Like, people have been tweeting me all week saying, you must feel like a fool, James. And I was like, well, no more than usual. But I think I was north of 100 million. You know, I really thought that given the fan unrest, that the club would almost feel obliged to go out and spend some serious money this summer.
Yeah.
And they have been relatively restrained, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, you think we've, sold Chesney for 13 million euros. What's that, about 50 million pounds sterling now at this point?
Yeah.
more or less the same. I think it's almost one for one, isn't it? So let's say 12
it
million.
Is, yeah.
12 million pounds we've got in, and we've sold Gabriel for 10 million pounds. So that's 22 million pounds. And we've signed Lacazette for 50 million. So we brought 22 million in. So, you know, our net spend, blah, blah, blah. It's 28 million pounds in a market in which Gylfi Sigurdsson goes for 45 million pounds. It's not a significant investment in the squad, is it?
No, it's not. It's not a huge. It's not a huge turnover in terms of the play staff. It's two in, really, and a bunch of players who weren't really being used anyway. Seemingly going out. So there hasn't been much churn, really. And I think that that's going to be a problem for Arsenal this season, because it can very easily lend weight to the argument of, well, you know, every time we lose a game, well, it's the same manager and the same players for the most part. What do you expect? And I mean, what do you feel about what remains of the transfer window? 10 days to go, I think we are, on the day of doing this podcast. Do you still think it's going to ramp up in terms of activity, or do you think it's going to be quiet?
I think we're going to get rid of some players. I think that's beginning to happen, obviously, isn't it, with Jenkinson. I mean, Bramall, you couldn't include him as part of the first team squad anyway. But Jenkinson is gone. Again, a guy who's not really part of the first team squad.
Gabriel
is gone. I assume Lucas Perez is going to go at some point this week. There's rumours that he's actually in Spain at the moment, and they're going to get that Deportivo deal done one way or the other. Again, it could turn out to be a loan move for some strange reason. I don't really understand what their thinking is, but I assume that if we're turning down 9 million and 12 million euros, that whatever this loan move is, perhaps allows us to get a bit more for him in the long term. I can't understand the ins and outs of it, to be perfectly honest, but he's going to go there. I think there could be a couple of others. I mean, we made a case earlier where you could be looking to improve certain positions anyway in the attacking side of things. But I think we need a central midfield player. And I think more and more, as we look at the central defensive options, we need to bring in a central defender. I don't think that the additions that we've made, as much as I like them, and I like the look of Lacazette, and I like the look of Kolasinac, you know, if we're not going to play Kolasinac in his right position, and if we're not going to give the right service to Lacazette, you know, I don't think that we've made enough additions to the squad. We haven't improved the overall quality of the squad enough for this team to challenge properly for the Premier League title. So I don't think we're a team that's gonna challenge for the title as it stands. And I think there's I think there's work to be done between now and the end of the transfer window. I think if we let more players go, that's great. If we can move some of those players on who are surplus to requirements, you're looking now at Kieran Gibbs, you're looking at Matthew Debushi as the two outliers, really, from those players who haven't really been involved at all. Maybe Jack Wilshere. I think we've got to sign more players. If we're going to be absolutely serious about challenging for the title, we've got to sign more players, better players.
Yeah, I think it's really unrealistic to look at this group, look at the additions that have been made and think that they're sufficient to turn us from a team that finished, you know, outside the top four to being legitimate title contenders. I mean, I just think that's completely implausible, to be honest. I mean, implausible things do happen in football, but... I'm not confident. I think that the squad, if we are genuinely serious about winning the big one or a big one this season, the squad needs to be better than it is. It needs to. It's not about quality. Sorry, it is about quality. It's not about quantity. The quantity is all wrong. We've got too many players and not enough of them are of the requisite standard.
Yeah, I did enjoy that Arsene Wenger run. We've got too many players. We've got 33 players and that's too many. As if somebody just came along and dumped a load of players on his doorstep one morning and he went, where did these guys come from? It's not as if I signed them all and gave them contracts. How is this happening? Yeah, it is. It's about the quality. I absolutely agree with you. So, you know, on that, Alexander Partridge, who's at Padgy on Twitter, who said, you rated Arsenal's window a month ago. How do you rate it now with just over a week to go? I think I gave it a 5 and you gave it a 6. I'm downgrading us to a 4 at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that 6 was because I felt it had been a very strong start, and I can't remember if it was purely the transfer activity factored in. I was encouraged by a few things off the field as well, Jens Lehmann's arrival and Per Mertesacker's, you know, future appointment. But you know, the signings were a great start. They really were. Lacazette, we didn't dither. We brought him in and got that deal done. Kolasinac was done early too, and I felt like we would push on from there. I really thought that we might add, you know, another couple of kind of first team quality players. That's what I'm talking about, really. Not squad players, but people who could come in and immediately improve the first 11.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I thought that we would do that, particularly in central midfield, and it hasn't materialised. And that is a big concern. That is a big concern. And when I think about, you know, the start of the window and all the, albeit wild, speculation about bids for Kylian Mbappe of 130 million euros and, you know, Thomas Lemar, 45 million euros, all these exciting deals that have come to pass, it's a little bit underwhelming. And that might sound strange given that we've broken our transfer record to sign a centre-forward, but I don't think we've done quite enough. I don't think we've done enough.
Well, here's another one. It comes from Marky Mark, who's at Marcus_Mangan. And he says, wouldn't a director of football have been able to line up deals for our unwanted players by now?
I'd like to think so. I mean, I can't really understand some of the difficulty we've had in offloading these guys. I mean, the Lucas Perez one is really bizarre. Like, if Deportivo have been offering 10 million euros. I mean, I've heard that maybe the structure of that deal wasn't to Arsenal's liking, i.e. the payments were made over a very protracted period. Sort of
17 you know, years.
Yeah, something like that.
We'll pay you $9.99 a month with a final payment.
Kind of that sort of deal. And so I guess that's put Arsenal off. But surely, I mean, we've got to get shot of some of these guys. And if it's been impinging on our incoming business, as I know you feel it has, then that's a real problem, isn't it? That's a real problem because we might not end up with a strong enough squad because we've spent all summer you know, focusing on trying to shift fringe players.
Yeah.
Fringe players.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think a director of football might have helped in that regard. But we know that Arsene was completely opposed to that sort of appointment.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why you would be opposed to somebody who could come in and just help you rather than, you know, not this director of football idea that he comes in, he buys the players, et cetera, but having a better support structure for what is a difficult job. Let's face it, that it is difficult to move on players like Matthew Debussy, like Kieran Gibbs, like Lucas Perez. If they're unwanted and so obviously unwanted, it is not easy to move them on, particularly when their salaries at Arsenal might not be in line with some of the salaries at other clubs or at the clubs that might be interested in them, for example, like a League One club in France is not going to have the same ability to pay Matthew Debussy what is being paid at Arsenal. But there are ways of making that happen, right? You can say to Matthew Debussy, look, you know, here you go. We'll pay up the final year of your contract, something like that. I mean, it's costly, but ultimately you're going to have to pay that anyway, aren't you? If he stays for the final year of his contract. So, you know, that kind of position can only be a help. Because it is difficult, and if you're dealing with coaching the team, selecting the team, trying to move on players, trying to sign players, worrying about finances, worrying about like two players for 25 million when you've actually only bought one for 50 million, you know, that kind of stuff. I feel like we're doing ourselves a disservice by not having those structures in place, and that comes back to stuff we talked about last season. But there you go.
In an ideal world, it would work like this. Arsene Wenger gives this director of football a list that has, you know, Lucas Perez, Matthew Debussy, you know, Joel Campbell, whoever it is, Carl Jenkinson on it, and says, look, I don't need these guys. Do your best with getting rid of them. And he gives him another list that's got a bunch of exciting central defenders and central midfielders on it. And he says, I want these guys. Get me one of them.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to involve himself with the minutiae of it. I do think that would be an efficient system and a good way to operate, and I don't necessarily understand Arsene Wenger's resistance to it. But
yeah, maybe it's like the backroom equivalent of not playing any centre halves at centre half.
Yeah, it's that. How can I complicate this for myself?
Have you got any more?
I think I probably do. Yeah, why not? We've come this far. So Joe Laycock on Twitter says, I thought Ramsey was our best player on Saturday. Yes, he leaves gaps, but his runs make our play more dynamic. Are we in a Pogba situation with him, where realistically we need to play a three-man midfield to release Rambo?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're playing him as one of two traditional central midfield players, the issue that he leaves gaps. He does leave gaps because he gets forward so much. And there's no question to my mind that Ramsey is better in the final third than anywhere else on the pitch. The timing of his runs is absolutely sensational. You know, the way he gets into the box, the way he attacks the ball, he's very brave. You know, he tries to get on the end of things. And running from deep, obviously, means that it's more difficult for defenders to track him. But yeah, you see the difficulty when we do get exposed in central midfield. And as I said, I think he's playing to instruction. I think he's being told to play that far forward and to get into those positions. And Arsene Wenger is banking on the back three or the back five to help fill those gaps, which when you're playing somebody like Oxlade-Chamberlain, this isn't a criticism of Oxlade-Chamberlain, I should point out. Oxlade-Chamberlain, for his entire career, has been essentially an attacking player. He's been a winger or an attacking central midfielder when he's been played in there. I know there's been a couple of games where he's played as a deep central midfield player, but generally speaking, he is an attacking player, and we can see his attacking qualities when he gets forward in that right wing-back position. But he does not have defensive... not that he doesn't have defensive qualities, but he doesn't have a great understanding of the defensive side of the game.
I think he's not schooled in that.
Yeah, yeah, I think he's improving in that regard, but he's not naturally defensive. So his first thought isn't to get in there and fill that gap where Ramsey might have been. You know what I mean? So I think we leave ourselves at a bit of a deficiency there. I didn't think Ramsey was bad either against Stoke. I thought he got forward very well. But I do think, he's a guy who should play maybe as a number 10 or in one of the two roles behind the striker in the current system that we play in. I think that he would probably flourish more there. But again, we don't have the players behind him to allow that to happen. We don't have the quality in central midfield to push him further forward.
Mm. No, and I suppose with Alexis and Ozil available, you know, it's going to be difficult for him to get one of those places for himself. Unless maybe we do go back to a back four and a midfield three, and then your front three could be, you know, Alexis from the left, Ozil from the right, maybe Lacazette through the middle, Ramsey breaking on as your 10, and then Xhaka alongside a magical new signing.
Is that not too many players?
No.
Okay.
I think 4-3-3 kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, I just had it in my head. I thought that was quite revolutionary of you.
I know, no, we could be allowed to do that. I know it sounds absurd, but there you go. It's an option.
Right. Okay, yeah, well, we'll see. Again, a player who I'm not sure we're getting necessarily the best out of, because of the system that we play. So it just comes back to this muddledness that we have in terms of what's the best way to deploy some of the players that we have.
Well, look, I'm sure it'll... I mean, the problem is, the reason it feels so disappointing is that when you look at the fixture list we've got coming up, it might get trickier before it gets better, you know? It's Anfield next, and that's, you know, whatever's going on at Liverpool, that's never an easy fixture, that's for sure.
No, it certainly isn't. You wouldn't fancy it with the way our defence is at this moment in time. So hopefully there's a bit more of a plan. Okay, here's a question from Brendan Fennell, who wants to know, would you rather fight one Kolasinac or three Walcotts?
Oh, three Walcotts.
Do you fancy your chances?
I think three Walcotts. I think so. I mean, I imagine that he's quite sort of bitey and scratchy in a fight. He's become quite sort of like faux feisty, hasn't he, in recent years? He can have those moments where he kind of turns and squares up to people. But I think if it got serious, I don't think he'd fancy it. I mean, look, I'm not a fighter, but I against Kolasinac, I would be really in trouble. Really in trouble. I mean, anyone fighting an actual tank would be in real trouble.
Yeah. I think, like, Walcott is quite strong. He's, you know, good physique, good shape, hits the gym.
They all name him as, like, a fitness freak, don't they? Always, the players always say he's the guy who's in the gym all the time.
Walcott.
So, yeah, maybe. Yeah, Walcott, yeah. Yeah. And Walcott, Bellerin and Welbeck are the ones that come up. But I just think, I don't, it's the psychological thing. I think I could, you know, the mind games, I think I could beat him.
Yeah. Mind games.
Even three of them.
Look over there, Theo. What? And then you run off. Yeah.
Exactly. It would be difficult, but I think I could manage it.
That wouldn't work with Kolasinac because he would pursue you like Principal Skinner pursues Bart on that day that he bunks off school. You know that one? Where he
Absolutely.
Just follows him everywhere and Bart's like just looking back. Oh my God, he's everywhere. That's what Kolasinac would be like before he tears your head off.
I don't know if he speaks English either, so the mind games element might be tricky.
True. Maybe you could just pronounce his name wrong. And maybe he'd stop and get furious.
That would, but the problem is that would only infuriate him. I think that would make him more aggressive.
This is how you say my name. Sead Kolasinac.
He sounds nice.
That's it.
He sounds nice.
He does sound actually very friendly. He's got the security that sort of frame will give you, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You can afford to be that friendly, can't you, when you're that size? That could be it. Okay, final question, I think, for today comes from Arse2Mouse, who's at Arse2Mouse. And he wants to know, is time a flat circle?
I don't know. I thought it was a cylinder, time. Do you know about what shape time is?
I haven't ever thought about time as a shape, but I think time as a circle is something to do with Nietzsche, isn't it? That basically you just keep repeating the same thing over and over again. You're destined to just repeat
it's
the
Nietzsche,
same.
It's Nietzsche, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Flat circle means everything that happens has already happened, essentially.
Right. And will happen again. So this could be obviously tied into watching Arsenal in a very meaningful and significant way.
Of course, it feels very much like it is. I actually think it, I mean, I probably do actually believe something like that, that everything that has happened is also concurrently happening. So,
so you believe in the multiverse theory, like the idea of parallel dimensions and that kind of stuff. That's basically it, isn't it?
I've got no basis for it, but you know, someone, I read it in a book or something, and I was like, oh, that sounds plausible.
Is that quantum theory or something? Is that what that is? I can't remember.
I think so. Yeah, but being an Arsenal fan does plenty to sort of, you know, verify those beliefs. Mm. I mean, it is absolutely infuriating. We are two games into the season. It's probably obvious, it's probably evident to people listening that both you and I are like, oh, I cannot believe we're doing this again.
Yeah. But in the other dimensions, James, we've beaten Stoke 5-0. And other me and other you are really happy. They've had a goodly morning talking about this on their podcast. And we're sitting here in this fucking dimension. Can we get a transfer window for their dimensions, please? Because I'd like to go to the other one, if that wouldn't be too much trouble. You know, the one where we win every game and everyone's really happy. Wenger in. People are just delighted. More Wenger, please. Let's have some even greater length of time for Arsene Wenger. But, I mean, that could explain, you know, when you go to look for your keys and you can't find your keys.
Mm.
What if it's like just crossovers of dimensions? In the other dimension, you haven't put your keys there in the bowl in the front hall. And then when you go back out, they're there. And you go, I'm sure I looked there. But that could be just like dimensions molding into one another, going, and you don't even realise it.
I wonder if the reason we can't sell Mathieu Debuchy is because he's holding out for a move to another dimension. A dimension which, in a dimension which he is the most prized player in Europe and, you know, worshipped by all fans.
PSG have just bought him for £200 million.
That's it. That's what he's holding out for. So, yeah, until that comes along, a club from another dimension, we're going to be stuck with him.
Yeah. Dick Law is operating in the wrong dimension, I think.
It feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does feel like we are operating in our own dimension, transfer market-wise, at times.
Jesus. The fucking dimension of inaction. The worst dimension.
It is. It is actually, of all the dimensions, of all the possibilities, it's a relatively boring one that we're all experiencing right now.
For fuck's sake. Think of all the great dimensions we could be in where there's actual, like, hoverboards, flying cars, all kinds of magical shit could be going on, and we're stuck in this fucking dimension with all the shit that goes on in it. This, oh, what a fucking dud hand life has dealt us.
We really pulled the short straw on this one, guys.
We sure did. Okay, well, look, we had better leave it there. We have got a game against Liverpool coming up. Is it Saturday or Sunday? I should be looking.
It's Sunday afternoon.
4 o'clock?
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
All right. Well,
how do you feel about those? I know you don't like the 5
p.m. I'm sort of used to those. Used to those. Yeah, 4 o'clock Sunday's all right, you know, because it's Sunday and, yeah, I'm all right with that. That's not too mushroomy for me, whereas, yeah, I don't like the mushrooms of 5:30. So look, we'll discuss that game and more on the Arsecast on Friday. Thanks as ever for listening. And well, look, a problem shared is a problem halved and all that. So I presume everybody's feeling much, much better now in our shit dimension.
Yeah, exactly. We better get used to it, guys. I feel like this isn't the last defeat we'll have this season.
All right, we'll catch you on the next one. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.